Today I'm going to speak about a theme which is an unusual one in the sense that it has incredible spiritual significance, yet it also has incredible significance for anybody in the world, anywhere, at any time. That significance is related to the way we feel about ourselves, why we do what we do, and even in the most cosmic of all existential, philosophical, fundamental spiritual issues, why we are here. Now, this question of why we are here has plagued man since the beginning of time. So the idea of why we are here has plagued man since the beginning of mankind. All people have at least had some members of their community asking questions like, why are we here? Asking, what is my purpose? What is the point of my existence? Now, often people make the conclusion that the purpose of my existence is to exist for others. For example, to exist for the family, to exist for the future of the children, or to exist for the taking care of others. People engage in service to others in that way. Sometimes people think they have a mission in life, and that their mission in life may be related to some political reformation or some social reformation. Other people think their mission is to do some kind of reformation for some spiritual movement or to spread something or do something wonderful. Now, all of these ideas are in and of themselves fine, and they have their place. But what I want to discuss today is the power behind these ideals. That which fuels this feeling or this need to make something special out of life, to make sense. To make things feel as if there's a meaning to them which makes it all somehow worthwhile. Now, this esoteric or even an existential foundation upon the human existence, upon which human existence rests, is very broad. Not only this, but I have heard, and I've also seen, that some animals have this same feeling of having a purpose, having a function, having a role which is significant, which is their role. Like there are cats who think their job is to patrol the house area or to greet people when they come in or to do something which is significantly useful. There are dogs who do it taking care of herding sheep or herding animals, or there are horses to do it. Of course, not all animals, but the more domesticated ones. Animals in the wild wouldn't necessarily have the same kind of feeling of a requirement to fulfill some kind of role, those animals who live in the wild. Such kinds of phenomena are found to a large extent amongst domesticated animals. In other words, your pets or those animals you would use on a farm or something like that too. Do some kind of service. A horse could feel like this, but a cow might not. A cow is just eating grass, doing its thing. it may not have that same feeling of responsibility. But the horse, which could be herding lots of cows, would feel it, would feel lost without that kind of connection to the rider, that connection to the service. We've also seen that domesticated animals take the mood, take the expression, take the consciousness of their owners. Now that's actually quite interesting, how that human feeling, that human feeling of this meaning of life. Now, when you talk about a meaning to life, usually that brings up in the mind this very cosmic ideal of there being some very great meaning, that there's some really great meaning. It's usually connected with God. There's some kind of ideal that when this is performed, then all things will make sense. Everything will fall in place. It will be a perfect manifestation of our existence. Now that force behind this feeling is what I want to examine. And the reason I want to examine it is because I saw in myself a very interesting phenomenon that has been developing. Maybe it was always there, but I'm very aware of it now. That, you know, I'm doing things all the time. Everybody is. And our brains are all wrapped up in our work. Our brains are all wrapped up in accomplishing things, in performing tasks, in doing what we have to do, in solving problems, dealing with situations. So this is a non-stop activity, except for those few moments when we're having like a lot of fun in our weekly lives. Now, here in this situation that we might find ourselves, I always go every week to, every week, what am I saying? Every day I come into my temple room and I sit before my deities, or I stand before my deities. And although a lot of stuff happens when I go in the temple room and I stand before my deities, the very first thought or very first communication, because we're speaking here about a real communication that takes place when I first walk in the room and I'm always going to say something, to introduce myself. I'm always introducing myself to the deities in the sense of I have something to say when I first walk in the room. And usually the first thing is, I'm sorry, but, or I'm sorry for. And for the last like couple of days, I've caught myself saying this. And it's like the deities are saying back, well, what are you sorry for? Why do you have to be sorry? And I've been thinking of it, that what do I say? Oh, I'm sorry I didn't come to see you sooner, but I was working. Or I'm sorry that my mind got all wrapped up in all this other stuff. Or always it boils down to, I realize, a feeling of not being good enough. Now, isn't that interesting? Like, for example, when I say, I'm sorry that I didn't come sooner. Then I have this feeling that I should have come sooner. Now, why should I have come sooner? Even I don't know why. I've come when I've come. If I had come sooner, I would not have come later. I mean, it's only one day. And I don't spend all day in my temple room. I spend like, you know, some significant parts. So if I didn't come sooner this time, I would have come another time. So why should I feel sorry that I didn't come sooner? Or I'm sorry that I just didn't I haven't been thinking about you or taking care. What is to take care? I've been busy. Or I'm sorry that I haven't been able to live up to dot, dot, dot. But who is it that wants me to live up to this something? And what I have realized is that all of these feelings are my feelings. It's not something that is pushed upon me by the deities. There's certainly nobody else around who's pushing that upon me. It's myself. I walk in front of the deities, and often I start off with a, I'm sorry. I'm apologizing. And what am I apologizing for? Ultimately, when I analyzed it after being aware of this thought, I'm not good enough. What is it I'm not good enough? I'm not good enough for not being there. I'm not good enough for not doing more. I'm not good enough for not doing what the deities wanted of me. I'm not good enough for being this perfect person who does everything perfectly. Ultimately, I'm not good enough for this being, not being the perfect person who does everything perfectly. And somehow I feel I should. But why should I feel that I should? Even I don't know. I don't know why I feel I should. Yet I do. And what's interesting is I've always felt this way. Long before I went to church, long before I became a Hare Krishna, long before I stopped being a Hare Krishna, I had this feeling that I should be somehow perfect. Now, okay, probably it came, we could say, from my childhood. I always felt, perhaps, that I should be perfect, somehow or another. Now, that may not be true. It may not be a kind of like relationship between my childhood and my present existence in the sense of this perfection. I think when I figure it out, when I analyze it, when I look at this situation, this kind of like obsession with being perfect, or rather striving for that perfection, I think it's something very deep in the basis of my existence. I'm going to get back to that. Because a lot of people might be thinking, and rightfully so, I don't care about perfection. I don't bother with it. Even worse, I don't give a damn. And believe it or not, I feel like that too. Well, then this becomes very strange. Here I am talking about this kind of like drive for perfection, and yet at the same time, I don't give a damn. Well, we have this situation of these two things layered upon each other. You can also see it in terms of a person wanting so much to be good and yet not caring and being bad. That's why when we talk about people in a rather more comprehensive sense, we say you take the good with the bad. There's good in people and there's bad in people. Nobody's all good. Nobody's all bad. That has never been more clear than nowadays, where all around the world, in all kinds of different situations, people are realizing that nobody's perfect. Nobody's all good. Everybody's colored in various ways, with good and bad. But we generally can see this person is generally a good person, this person's generally not such a good person, but we can see that. Now, this this feeling where I can be somebody just simply dying to strive for perfection is tempered with this somebody who doesn't really care about it. Yet, here, if I walk in my temple room in front of the deities, now, I know, here are my deities. In my conception of perfection, whether or not it exists in any absolute term, that's not the point. It's an idea. It's an ideal. My deities are perfect. Everything about them in my ideal is perfect. Because whatever they are, that's the standard of perfection. Whatever it is they are, they set the standard that I wish to attain as my perfection. So when I walk in front of them, I feel sorry because I haven't reached the perfection that I feel they are. So I feel unworthy, not good enough. Now that is a very fascinating point. It's a point which very deeply rests on the soul's endeavor or the soul's purpose. Even more deeply, the reason why I'm in this particular format of existence. Because I don't feel good enough. And why? Well, let's just take the example of somebody who's always striving for perfection. As soon as you say, always striving for perfection, that means you're always within an imperfection. You feel imperfect, and you have to strive because you're constantly viewing the imperfection. And therefore you say, it's not good enough, I have to do better. And you know that you never can do it perfectly because you're still in that mood of striving. So you always feel you can do it better, which means whatever it is now, you ready for this? It's not good enough. That means the constant value of life is that you're not good enough. It is not good enough. Now let's contrast that to the me who sometimes doesn't give a damn about it. Or the me who just says, I can't do it. Like when I play a musical instrument. I always feel, number one, I'm definitely not good enough. But there are exceptions to this, and I'm going to get to that. Number two, I hear the perfection in other guitar players. And number three, I'm never going to be good enough. Because number four, I'm never going to work hard enough. Now, there are reasons for that, like, you know, age, time, motivation. Why should I spend 8 hours a day to be good enough? What would be the point? There are other things I've got to do. There are other things I want to do. And in each one of these things, I have the exact same situation. Not good enough. Got to get better. But sometimes I don't care. There's no reason to do it. In other words, what's the motivation for me to do it? Okay. When you feel this kind of like, yeah, I could work all day and work all night and never be good enough, it works very negatively against one's motivation. Especially when you're a certain kind of a person who feels, if I can't attain that perfection, why bother? So that's just me. I'm one of those strange people like that. Then there's another class of people who I know very well, who also feel they're not good enough. And basically, you can put everybody in this category. That I don't mean this particular class of not feeling good enough, but everybody feels they're not good enough. But in this particular class of feeling not good enough, this personality type is always endeavoring to get better. They also have an idea of perfection. They may also feel they're not good enough. They may also feel they'll never attain that kind of perfection. But somewhere they know they might if they work hard enough. If they can only work harder, only try better, only achieve this education or learn this trick, they will be able to attain what they wish. Such people can have many certificates on their wall, educational certificates and prizes, and where they're constantly testing their capacities, constantly pushing their limits, working hard, practicing, working hard, developing. Now, there are some who say, I would put myself kind of like in the middle category. The person I just described is in an extreme endeavoring category. And then there's the extreme the other way. Those who might say, I can't get nothing together. I'm never going to get anything together. It's hopeless. I've got no capacities. Even if I had, I just don't feel like it. I don't see what's the point. I don't see what's the reason to work to do it. Such persons may not even care to have a house, may not even care to do anything, don't have money, just know that they've given up. They know they're not good enough. And they just embrace that. Not in a happy kind of sense, but in an acceptance kind of sense. That's just the way it is, and there's really nothing I can do about it. So they push that aspect of endeavoring to be better, endeavoring to attain perfection. They just push that out of their way. So I know that there was this objection when I was talking originally about my feelings of perfection. And I hope that speaking about these three classes, those who find it hopeless to attain and therefore feel not good enough, those who feel they're not good enough, I try to attain and sometimes don't care, or those who really care about it and dedicate their whole lives to attaining some kind of perfection. All three feel they're not good enough, but they're dealing with it in a different way. Then there are those who have already attained a certain kind of perfection. Those who have really done something fabulous. Yet, you will find amongst such persons, of course, I don't know that many of them, and perhaps the histories that I might read about these people are incomplete. Perhaps I'm not getting a very complete picture of people who don't have this problem. But I have seen to a large extent that people who have this kind of situation that have already attained some kind of perfection don't have to work at it. Have some kind of feeling of not being good enough that now manifests in a different way. You can, if somebody is very spiritually inclined, let's say they may attain some kind of perfection and still have a spiritual dissatisfaction that can never be satisfied by attaining some accomplishment in this realm that we live in. Or maybe somebody may have accomplished but wonders, what's the point anyway? I'm still kind of bored sometimes, or I have to find out newer and newer ways to feel some excitement. And thus, They have this very strange feeling that I'm not good enough in the sense that I can't enjoy anymore, or something's lacking. Let's speak about this very unusual situation that can be there when we feel this not good enough. What is that underlying thing, and how does that relate to our overall spiritual dilemma? Our spiritual dilemma in terms of what really is the point of all of it? And how do I relate to this seemingly pointless existence? Now, sometimes I personally am not feeling, in relation to music playing, for example, I don't feel not good enough. Let's talk about it. When in terms of me personally playing some music, and I compare myself to those who really know how to play, I know I'm not good enough, and nothing anyone says is going to convince me otherwise. But sometimes, rarely, I'm in a situation where what I play actually manifests some kind of mood, or manifests some kind of feeling, or it just feels so right that the idea of the technique, or the idea of the emulation of somebody who really knows how to play, diminishes to such a degree it's out of my mind. It's no longer a factor. So I'm feeling a connection either to the universe or to the audience or to other band members. And we feel that connection, and we're sharing that musical energy. And even though I'm still the same, quote unquote, not good enough musician, I forget it. It's gone. It's out of my mind. It no longer matters, because something else has appeared, which is so powerful, so significant to me, that I no longer care or think about not being good enough. Indeed, I actually feel good about what I'm doing. So, even though it's the same person, the same skills, the same level of advancement, when it's put in the right spot, the whole quality of it changes. Like when a key finds the lock that it belongs to, when the piece of the puzzle fits in the whole puzzle, this little insignificant piece, which on its own is definitely insignificant, but when placed in the whole puzzle becomes very significant. Now that is pretty cosmic. This feeling of significance or insignificance, the feeling of being not good enough, is intimately, intrinsically related to being in the right spot. That includes right place, right time, right circumstances. That's why I'm using that word spot. When I'm in the right spot, then it's all making sense. Now, we've heard this example before. It's nothing really new. Yet this feeling of not being good enough is directly connected with that. Now, even you can be in a religious group, a religion. You can be in some kind of social welfare organization. But when you've got this feeling, somehow or another, somewhere rolling around back there, that comes up, that kind of existential situation, that all of a sudden just manifests in your consciousness, that gnaws at you, and says it's not right. What is the point? I don't connect. I don't feel right. It is often related to not being in the right spot. I suppose you could speak about it as, you know, the dog who's looking for the perfect home. But that is not the dog who's looking for the perfect home. Dog without a master. Remember the example? Yeah. Now, simply having a master doesn't solve that situation. It can be the wrong master at the wrong place, in the wrong time, in the wrong situation, in the wrong way in which the servant has to act. And then the servant gets stuck because as a servant, you lose the capacity to change master or change place. You're stuck. So simply declaring yourself a servant of God, for instance, or a servant of some personality, doesn't guarantee that you'll be in the right spot. What would guarantee that? Or is there a guarantee? I don't think there's a guarantee. But I think there is a set of parameters which determine what is the right spot. Now, having said that, we have to consider the possibility that your right spot in life might just be to suffer seriously in life. Because, let's say, life is a composite of various elements. So, your life is a composite of all your previous actions, your previous consciousness. And before you have taken birth in this life, you had to undergo the between lives process of determining the best way for you to transform your consciousness for the better. Because this feeling of not good enough is one of the bases upon which all life at all times goes on. I'm going to come back to that at the very end. The real, what I feel is most significant reason why we're here. But in this previous lifetime, we had to learn. The in-between life has determined the best way to overcome, the best way to transform the consciousness to something more positive might be to suffer, to feel the pain, to deeply feel the pain and get it in the consciousness to transform. Somehow, I don't know what the situation is. Everybody's different. It's not like that for everybody, but that possibility is there. But there are other situations. For example, a person has to be placed in a certain situation to really develop in another way. Maybe somebody's placed in a situation which would be more advantageous for their advancement, their development. Maybe somebody just can't handle pain anymore and is begging, please give me a vacation from this evolutionary business. So the right spot for you is an enjoyable atmosphere, enjoyable situation. So we have these like spots we belong in, generally speaking. But then there are the specifics of it. Like even in a musical world, you can't just play music with anybody. Oh yeah, of course, if you play off of the notes, if you play from scores, and you're not, to a certain extent, it doesn't really matter who you play with as long as they're good enough to play the score. But that's not even true, but it's much more so than if you're going to play an improvisation where you have to play with people that can feed you and you can feed them and there's a reciprocation. And even you have that, you may not be able to live with these people. Maybe you can't stand them. Maybe their personal habits are abominable, or maybe they, as people, they're awful or whatever. There's thousands of reasons why finding the right spot is difficult. But when you do, you know it. I know some people who know that their role in life is such. They've accepted it and they move with it. So all of these factors are there. In any case, even if you were to find that perfect spot, you would then want to do it better. You would want to improve it. You would want to make it more perfect, somehow or another. Unless you're in the situation of not caring anymore, or it's too much for you, or you're growing old. Growing old is an amazing process. It's an amazing process by which your drive to do things. Growing old is an amazing process. It's an amazing process by which your drive to accomplish, your drive to do things, your drive that pushes you in life can get much less. Just like us old folks, we drive slow. Whereas young people, they drive really fast. Because they got places to go, people to see, things to do, and if they don't, they anyway just got to drive fast to get there. And us old folks, we just kind of drive along, you know, and all these young people are behind us going, "Hey, old man, move faster." Anyway, that's just kind of a joke. So the point being that you don't really feel the same energetic requirement as when you're younger. And that's also part of life, that this biological energetic aspect of life says, "Oh, why bother?" But that doesn't mean you never feel that you're good enough. You feel that, "Oh, who really cares anyway? What's the use? What's the point?" Anyway, that's another situation. Now, back to the point of all this. How is this related to why we are here? Well, let's just look at it like this. What if, this is an assumption, a theoretical experiment, what if I am just that kind of a person? Yeah, what if? What if I am just that kind of a person? What if I am just that kind of a person who always feels one can do better? And what if there's another class of people who don't think like that? That would explain a lot, wouldn't it? Instead of us having to feel guilty for being in this realm, it transforms everything into just simply a different kind of person. Somebody who feels that they can do better. I don't know if people like us ever get to the point where we feel it's okay. We're satisfied with what we are. Satisfied with what we are. If we ever get from the point of being dissatisfied with what we are to get to the point where we are satisfied with what we are. And if we are dissatisfied with what we are, is the process of becoming satisfied with what we are a key to placing us in the spiritual atmosphere? Is self-satisfaction the key to attaining the spiritual atmosphere? Well, let's examine that. What if I were to walk in front of my deities without feeling I'm sorry? Without feeling I'm not good enough to stand before you and receive whatever? What if, like a child, you walk in front of the deities and say, "Hi," and just bathe in the love. Isn't that the interesting aspect of children? They haven't yet learned to be dissatisfied with themselves. They learn that when they grow up after a few years. But when they're in the baby form, they don't have this feeling. They just, mama, okay, I'm satisfied. Feed me good. Love me good. Take care of me. Oh, very good. This feeling of dissatisfaction with the self is not there in the same level or degree by any means as it is there in the old, as they grow up. They learn it. Or rather, could we say, it becomes part of the growing up process as their bodies grow. And they start to compare themselves to others in various ways. So now there's a standard to compare to. Babies don't compare themselves to other babies. They don't have that capacity. But as you grow up, you start to compare yourself to others. I am such relative to that person. And we develop dissatisfaction. I wish I could be like that. Let's say you might think of that in terms of the Supreme. I wish I could be like that. Usually, and I feel this is a very big mistake in literature, okay, that it's interpreted that when I compare myself to God, I feel that I want to be the enjoyer like God. And therefore, that means enviousness. I don't believe that at all. I believe it in turn, because it also doesn't make sense, because there are so many other things God is. Why can't I look at that and say, well, why can't I be like, you know, why can't I create things? And why can't I maintain for people everywhere? Why can't I support people everywhere? I mean, after all, if you're envious of God, you wouldn't just be envious of that portion of it. But anyway, maybe that's not the most important point. But I see it like this. Forget all the what people think. I don't care. It's just confusing. I see it in a positive sense. That I see looking towards the divine and I say, I wish to strive to be like that. I compare myself and I say I'm not good enough because I'm not fully manifesting that divine energy. So I wish to do so. But to do so, I need challenges. I need to grow. I need to exercise. I need to face situations. I need to face existence, which will strengthen me as I conquer things, as I go through various choices, as I make things work. I think this is the real reason we are here. I think it's not enviousness. I think it's this comparison and striving. You can, of course, call that enviousness. But the word envy is really not appropriate. I call it striving for perfection and having this arena to do it in. And this feeling of not good enough is therefore part of the fundamental existence of all of us. And it's what makes us find our spot, our piece in the puzzle of this quilt of existence, this quilt work, our little patch sewn in place. So that's my weekly realization. And so we'll take a little break until half hour past. And if you want, you can send me questions. I will try to answer. Of course, I will answer, but I don't know if I'll answer perfectly. So I will try to answer, striving to give the perfect answer, striving to perfectly take care of whatever is there. But knowing it will never be good enough because it's just not yet perfect. Is that bad? I don't think so. I have some questions here which are interesting. Here's one. The first phrase in this sentence is really cool. It says, the whole background of, let us say, the religious encounter, if one can call it as such. An encounter is like when you come in contact with other persons and it becomes, it's like an encounter. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. This phrase, the whole background of, let us say, the religious encounter, if one can call it as such, I'm talking about that phrase he just wrote. So I think that's a really cool way of phrasing it. It's an encounter. An encounter. It's something that we touch, something that we engage in, participate in for some period of time. An encounter is very much related to something that happens and then you move on to something else. So that's why I think that's interesting. Now, the question is that he would like to know what would be the support or the background or the, shall we say, the foundation, which I think is probably a better way to put it, of someone who speaks about or teaches about God. And the thing which is the exception here, which is the most important part, I suppose, of this question, is that even though that person may not be aware of the Supreme, may not be aware of the manifestations of the Supreme. Now, the rest of this question is not directly related, so I'm sorry that I'm rephrasing the question. But the idea would be that, what about that person who's speaking about the Supreme or teaching about the Supreme? Could it be that even though this person doesn't have that realization, doesn't have that vision, still the Supreme works through them, that there's a point to it, that there's a value to it anyway? Well, let's talk about people who go through the whole process of presenting themselves according to a tradition. They act, they transform themselves in various ways according to what is expected of them according to a particular tradition. You will see that in very obviously in Hinduism. You see that amongst the Islamic imams and followers. You see that in amongst Hasidic Jews who look very specific. Hasidic. It's just a name. Forget it. It doesn't matter. You see that amongst Orthodox Christians in Russia, the Orthodox. You see it in various religions where there's a certain culture, a certain way in which one looks, a certain format of action, a certain format of the way in which one thinks, speaks. And usually it's accepted in these traditions that when one becomes a fine representation of the specific manifestation of that religious way of thinking, that one becomes qualified to speak, one becomes a proper vehicle through which that knowledge, which each one of these groups, by the way, claims to come directly from God to the people. Now, I would maybe be so bold as to say that each one of these groups and each one of these teachers has realization to a certain extent. Otherwise, those who follow them There must be something about them. They must have some charisma, which is also spiritual. There must be something about them which offers something to the followers which they want, and therefore these people are known as teachers. After all, one of the most important qualifications of being as a teacher, known as a teacher, or being known as a guru, is there's somebody who's going to follow you. There's somebody who's going to listen to you. Otherwise, the whole designation is useless. You've got to have followers. That makes you a teacher or a guru or whatever. Leaders are known because there are people who follow. They may just be the same as anybody else, but they become known as the leader because they're in front and other people follow them. It's not necessarily so that because they are a leader, therefore they know, or therefore whatever. You'll see that amongst people who have followings or who have people that they teach, there sometimes you see the phenomena of the original group coming together for some reason which may be unrelated to a qualification of this person. But those who come later on assume the person has qualification because other people follow them. You can find that a lot in religious organizations. Sometimes people are placed in prominent positions within a religious organization for reasons unrelated to their personal qualifications. It may be advantageous to do so. It may be useful for some other completely different purpose. And maybe some start to follow, or there's some arrangement that they are following because they have a particular position. And others may come along later on and follow because others are already following, and they assume that because others are following and this person has a position, they know what they're talking about. And they may have such great realization or whatever. And in this way, a managerial arrangement turns into a spiritual perfection. This is not always the case. It's just possible. So just from that point of view alone, we can understand that in some cases, in some situations, that a person who may not really have such a great qualification becomes known. Now, does it really matter? That's the question. Let's say a person speaks and teaches, and what they say inspires you to such a level that you make great advancement, that you transform, that you develop. Now, does it actually matter to you what that teacher is or was or will be or whatever? Do you care, really? If what they gave you helped you, does it really matter what they are or are not? From that point of view, you can just take help from anybody, anywhere. It doesn't matter who they are. They could even just be somebody on the street or somebody you just meet. I mean, after all, they're giving you something incredibly valuable and you have taken to have value. Does it really matter to you what they are or are not? What really matters is what that communication causes you to become. So even if somebody has very great realization, if they can't express it, or what they say has no value to you, it really doesn't mean that much to you. It's kind of like, let's say you meet somebody very famous, but you don't particularly like what they do. I mean, I've been in that situation. I've met people in the musical world who are actually very famous, very good at what they do, very successful, recognized professionals, but I don't like their music at all. So the whole point of this of this meeting. You know, you meet this like famous person, and then it's like you're meeting this famous person, but because you don't like their music, you don't really care how famous they are. I mean, like, big deal. You know what I mean? I mean, it's hard to describe this. It's like, what really counts is what you get out of it. If you think about the implications of this, what a person is not as important as what you get out of being with them. So from that point of view, it really transforms this whole authoritative idea or qualification idea. If I were to put these words in bold, what is this person's authority? What is this person's qualification? Of course, if you want to buy a truck and somebody's recommending something to you, it would help to know that this person really knows about trucks, that this person has realization in trucks, that what this person has recommended in the past has been useful to those who have been buying trucks. So then from that point of view, you got the desire to hear from somebody, to learn from somebody, because this question is about that, to learn from somebody who has a proven track record. That means there is an experience, there is a series of positive events, series of positive experiences other people have had, that you have had, where this person has done something significant for you, which you really feel is worth something. Now, I may meet somebody on the street who may say something completely cosmic to me, and it may completely make me feel, wow, that is so fabulous. But I would not go back to that person and sit there and spend 2 hours listening to them talk. Unless, of course, that person was like some hidden Buddha somewhere, or you know what I mean. An unrecognized descendant from the higher realms. It's rare. And anyway, I wouldn't believe it. It would have to be. Anyway, you know what I mean. So, therefore, we go for like the proven track record too. Like there has to be, what that person says has to have some meaning. And it has to have some meaning to me. And it has to have consistency of meaning, of significance, so that I'm gradually feeling I'm moving somewhere. And all of that is far more important than who that person is, or what other people have recognized that person to be. Because some people will think this way about somebody, doesn't matter what that other person they're thinking about really is, they just don't like them. So you can't really take other person's opinions about people seriously. You have to find out for yourself. That's the rule. Find out for yourself. Do I like what the person is saying? That's number one. Number one of all things. Do I like what they say? Now, of course, you know, I like what Jerry Seinfeld says. He's very funny. You know, and it doesn't matter whether you know or you don't know. He's a very famous comedian. All over the world is known. Very funny man. I like what he says. I think it's great. That doesn't mean I'm going to sit down consistently and listen to this person talk about some other subject which is relevant to me. Like, for example, what I'm going to do with my life. I know this person is good for a laugh, so I go to them for a laugh. But if I'm going to listen and get some information, the first thing is I have to appreciate what they are saying in relation to myself. But sometimes people go to gurus, not for just information, not for methodologies. They go because they're looking for someone to follow. They're looking for someone to take responsibility for their lives. They're looking for someone to take them where they are now and place them somewhere else. They're looking for someone to approve them. They're looking for someone to lead them. They're looking for someone to protect them. They're looking for someone to create an environment within which they feel comfortable, or they have something to do, or they feel valuable. Now, all of those things may have their purpose in some way or another, but none of those things are related specifically to authority or qualification. A lot of it is just the way I think about a situation, or it may be due to some greater organization. So a lot of this feeling of the social arrangement, this comforting that I feel by following, may have nothing to do with the qualification, has nothing to do with authority. It's related to a social organization. It's related to ideals, which I accept. So all of this is an interesting way of looking at when we speak about organized religion or organized kind of teachers or that which is within a culture or that which has a certain mystique to it. And that should be very much separated from what a person says. Because when we talk about teaching, it's people who teach through their words. There's people who teach through what they do. There's people who teach by teaching you how to do something. So that is what is important. What it is they teach as compared to what it is you want to learn. And that is important. That is what's most important. That is the real essence of the learning process. Now, obviously, if you want to learn about how to attain the supreme or the divine, and that person is telling you things which make you feel like you're moving in that direction, then that's your choice to continue because you're getting what you want. You might find other persons help you. You might find another person becomes more significant to you. And at one point, it might be very, very important to you that the person that you are listening to really has that kind of connection or can make you feel that. But this is all in your side, what you feel is important. I know, for example, there are some people who don't have a college degree, yet can teach you very well about certain aspects of knowledge, as well as someone with a college degree in the field. If you reject the knowledge because you think there's no qualification and therefore you shouldn't listen, you can be missing out on good opportunities. So I think we have to be more aware of what it is we're actually doing when we search out for authority, we search out for qualification, we search out for that mystic capacity. Okay, then I got another question here. In the gospel, there is a statement, "Be perfect as your Father is perfect." And a similar statement is present in the Urantia book, where it addresses to every intelligent being. What do you think about it? Well, sure. That's just what I said in the lecture. Of course I agree to that. The whole concept of that feeling of wishing to be qualitatively in that kind of mood, ambience, quality, that perfection of the supreme, that standard which is set by the divine. That's fine, and that's just perfect. After all, you wouldn't want to be as perfect as other things which are not as perfect as that which is there, that which the supreme is. I mean, after all, that's a wonderful standard. And my last question here, I have to think about it. I have to read it first. Okay, here's an interesting question: that sometimes helping another person may include doing something which makes the person who you're trying to help feel somehow badly. Now, I would question that. That may make sense, like, if, I don't really think it does in all cases, but this is just an example. For example, if you've, if you're with an alcoholic, and the alcoholic has finally found a bottle of alcohol in your place, and you run up and you take it and you grab it away, and maybe you have to fight with them, or you're a lifeguard. A lifeguard is somebody who saves people at the beach. I used to do that, so I know what it means. But let's say a person is drowning, and you go out to save them. And the first, usually they think they're not drowning because they're so filled with water, they're not thinking properly. And they'll even fight you, especially if they're men, they think, I can take care of myself. Or sometimes they're so hysterical, they'll just grab onto you and drag you down, thinking that you're some kind of life preserver, they'll just push you under. So what you've got to do is sometimes you even have to knock them out. Or you have to just grab them by the hair and just pull their ears or do something violent to slap them into shape so that you can bring them to shore, usually with your arm under their neck. So obviously that in that particular situation, or even a doctor who has to amputate an arm to save the body because there's gangrene, even though the patient doesn't want it. So there are obviously situations. Every mother knows you have to tell the child no when the child wants to do something harmful. Obviously, there are situations where to do something good for someone, you have to get them or you have to force them to do something they don't want to do. But then again, if we were to take this in terms of advancement, and this is what this question was actually addressing, not necessarily the same thing. Because we're dealing in terms here of not, we're not dealing in terms here, sorry, we start again. We're not dealing in terms here of a transformation of a very self-destructive act. We're dealing in terms of transformation of the mind, transformation of the heart. We're talking about transformation of the self so that the self can move forward in terms of advancement. Now, if a person doesn't want to do that, you cannot force them to do that. So if you're doing something which they don't want, thinking that it'll help them spiritually, that's not going to work. You can't force people to transform spiritually. But let's say a person does want to transform, and then you say, I'm not going to judge whether what you say is right or wrong. We're just talking here about a technique. If you say, if you act like this, it will help you. And then you might say, the other person might say, well, that's going to be tough to do. And you say, well, if you do it, try it. If it helps, it's worth the pain. Then you have to voluntarily say, okay, I shall try. But if somebody is forced to do it, most of the time, they'll not wish to do it. They'll not wish to continue. They will, to a certain extent, reject whatever it is that they had to do. It will not have the desired effect. It might temporarily, but when we're talking about long-term spiritual gain, long-term spiritual advancement, long-term spiritual evolution, doing something you don't want to do is usually difficult for advancement. Not always, but usually. Let's say, for example, get up early in the morning or do something in the morning spiritually. Okay, you may not want to do it, but when you do it, you feel good about it. That's different because you decided to do it and you had the experience it was okay after you did it, if you feel like that. So therefore, you continue not against your will, but with your will. But let's say every morning a person doesn't want to get up, is sick of getting up, it makes them feel lousy, and you force them, saying it's good for you, they'll ultimately just reject everything you do. So it's not necessarily a good thing to force anybody to do anything. But then again, you have to see in each particular situation. There's no absolute principle. It's just you've got to do what's best for all concerned. And I thought I gave some principles which might be helpful. You can say whether this was helpful or not.